Johnny Gaunt basically said, you two talk a lot of shit and you enjoy it. Yeah.
Basically,
That's true.
So I've got a whole week of John next week talking shit.
He's going to be recording some bits from out there as well, John.
Like he did last year, yeah? Because that went down really well.
You can't complain. We ended up putting your one out. We just didn't put anyone else's.
It took you 6 months to try and get some content out of it.
Sure.
GPT kept them coming out. It's kind of like, maybe this will get something from it.
We were busy last year. Busy woman last year. We're different. We're
professionals.
In a full world 2.0.
Nice.
I'm in the top 50 of the UK top 100 accountants.
You personally?
Me? Yeah, you two aren't even on the fucking list. Just me.
We didn't apply.
Is he listing me?
Is he?
I don't think I am.
They've changed the list round. It's done now not on number of followers, but on your SSI or whatever the hell that thing
Social
is on the
Social selling thing. Index.
The one that Dermot does.
Yeah,
Dermot's on.
Oh, yeah, but Johnny's on his quest there.
I'm on a mission.
He is.
That's
got a long way to go.
Was it 1 million followers?
They just changed your goalposts. It's not followers anymore. So what are you going to do?
I'm just going to buy Sales Navigator because it gives you extra 10 points. And then anything else that I can sign up for, I'll
buy it. Buy everything.
Yeah. I'll have a LinkedIn t-shirt on.
The thing is, John, no one can see your own SSI.
It'll be like, 120. It'll be like, it only goes up to 100.
It's like everyone at FD Works, Johnny, isn't it? It's like everyone gives it 10%.
And that's because I'm giving it 200%. The average is 110%.
Yeah, that's it. Now, I think you have captured the entire of LinkedIn with your post, John.
It's a bit of fun. And I do it tongue in cheek. I guess I've been hiding for a while in terms of every time I try and write something, I delete it and then I write it again. And it's like a full stop. Can I say that? Can't I say that? And it was just one of those. I was messing around. It's just, I'm just going to say something.
Go nuts.
Say something. And then it looks shit without a picture. So I was just playing around with ChatGPT and it's like, that looks really shit. I like it.
And now, unfortunately, you're roped in. And 4 years later, you'll be still doing a podcast with two idiots. That's what Indy's discovered.
I literally walked in the door and I was like, yeah, okay, I'll stay for some time. And then they were like, ha, we've locked the door. You're never getting out.
Ryan, have you told Indy about what she's got to do for Accountex yet? After her sexy elf episode?
No, I'm waiting until you purchase the outfit.
Were you the sexy elf, John?
Ryan was the sexy...
I was the elf. You were Santa, weren't you? Yeah.
He was the dirty Santa.
Filthy Santa.
Fingers for cigarettes.
I'm taking it.
You're weird.
Yeah, yours was weird, yeah. But John's actually just looked like a much younger, hunkier version than him, just in an elf outfit. That's what I thought.
You're doing more ChatGPT stuff, Johnny, because honestly, sometimes I look at them, I'm like, where'd you even... You just literally just chucked it in, and then the words don't even say anything, do they? Usually
gibberish,
they never say something that makes sense.
So like that first one, it's almost like the whole concept of if you look at the top three. So the top three have got about 80,000 between them will fill up Wembley Stadium. So when you think about it, it's fuck. How do you even do that? I'm not sure whether I've ever seen 80,000 people in my entire life. And the whole concept of it, and that was almost like the thought of how do you get 80,000 people to follow you? And then that was the bit of, I might just have to stand outside of a tube station. So I thought I'd just do a little picture. That picture probably took about 5 or 6 because some of the shit that it was writing is absolutely appalling. And so I then tried to do it in capital letters, but no, it's just a randomness. And it's just like, then it's no, whatever comes out and it's going in there.
I quite like it.
Hello and welcome to the Digitalms in a Cruel World podcast. Another great episode for 2024 coming up. We've got Johnny Gaunt joining us as our guest of honour. We're going to find out what he's been up to the last few months and what we should expect from him later this year. Also, we've got a few bits and pieces of app news. It's been a little bit quiet, so not quite the bumper session we had on the last episode. And for anyone that's interested in maybe pitching in a 30-second clip like Sam Mitchum, if wants to threaten Ryan for any reason, please get in touch and we'll make sure we include it in the trailer. How are you, Ryan? Are we going to have to look for proof of life from you, Ryan, at some point in the future?
What, to check if I've been destroyed by Sam? Probably, yeah. I am quite terrified. I'm going to just stay south of the country. It's safer down here, normally.
On the basis that no northerners come anywhere near where you live?
No, yeah, exactly. I'm sure there's like a guard around that prevents you coming south.
It's called the Midlands.
Who do you reckon the strongest accountant is then?
Lucy Cohen used to be a powerlifter, and Dale Rodriguez powerlifts because I can't remember exactly what he's got, but he's got a problem with his bones. Is that right? So he has to powerlift to keep his bone density up.
So what we used to do is we used to pick two people. So you pick two people, and then it's like who'd win.
Lucy would beat Dale every single day.
Okay, so then Lucy goes through to the next round. So you then
final round. Like, it's like gladiators, right? It's like the final. You should be at the top of the travelator, absolutely pummeling you back down to the bottom.
So that's very topical because gladiators is back on, isn't it?
It's almost like I know what's going on, Johnny.
Down with kids. So you then got others. So who else?
I would have.
Carl Reeder. Carl Reeder looks pretty solid.
Carl Reeder.
Won't mess with him, would you?
Who would Carl fight then?
Oh, Red Bird.
That'd be a dirty scrap, wouldn't it? Man from Solderwood.
I don't know what that means. Can you find someone really weedy and weak for me to fight?
Yeah, John.
Go on.
There must be tag team wrestling matches.
Good to, yeah. So we need to speak to Dan Cockerton, because this could be like...
Yeah, the intro to the show.
Or it could be like the first part of the evening entertainment. Like wrestling. Lights come up, Indy tapping somebody out.
Oh, yeah, but who would that be?
Isn't there like a Royal Rumble?
Yeah.
Like a Royal Rumble, where you get 100 people in. And then it might be you gang up, and then it's at the end of it, it's just the three of you left.
Or you could have a team that represents each accounting event. And then, like, you get the Mexican wrestlers, everyone's got, like, the colours from every event on, and then that would be it. So you could have end of season battle royale in, like, June or July.
Well, Caroline against Dan. Final showdown. I was just imagining Indy, like, getting Glenn Foster in a headlock. That, for some reason, was the image that went into my head.
Why Glenn Foster?
I don't know.
Anything.
It's Royal Rumble. You just got to go for it.
We are kicking off this week's app news. There's not much in the way of app news this week, so we're just going to cover some of the highlights. So there was an update about the accountancy sector growing by 0.3% on GDP. There were some slight declines overall in the previous couple of months, but we are up on the previous years. So I think for November, we were up to 0.6%, which is an increase of 2.5% from the previous November. And there were some specific sectors that saw some decline, such as the manufacturing sector, which is no surprise, and also the pharmaceutical sector. They took some hits with the monthly outputs over the last 3 months. But there's no surprises there because it was the last 3 months of the year and construction projects have been generally on pause. So I guess we will see how we rebound, but that is the news on GDP. What does GDP stand for? Gross domestic product. Is that right?
Correct.
That's right, yeah. I mean, I guess what this does show is the accountancy sector is pretty stable, still showing growth, unlike some other sectors which have been in decline. And what I think it does compare to is maybe where salaries would be expected to go up. Should we expect a higher increase in salary than the growth?
Are you expecting a salary increase?
In the millions. Phenomenal salary growth.
All right. No need to brag.
I've got something that's the complete juxtaposition of a 0.3% growth. This is the Horizon computer system, the scandal that's happened there at the post office. And come back into view off the back of ITV producing the docudrama that they've been rolling out in the last few weeks. And you can't escape this at the moment. This is probably the biggest accounting scandal of, I don't know, the last decade, last 20 years or so, is it? I think 2000 was when the Horizon computer system was launched into post offices. Good timing for anyone that can remember the Millennium Bug, but this is on a different scale to the Millennium Bug because that was a big flop. And so it seems was Horizon, but in a different way. What's fascinating, worrying, scary about this is the length of time that this has gone on for when the problems within the system were already known, at least in the early 2000s, that there was something not quite right here. And there were probably problems known prior to the launch of the product and the fact that all of this was just pushed through. There's a lot of finger pointing going on, some of it entirely valid and probably some of it not. So valid, every man and his proverbial dog, the MPs involved at the time, the accountants, the lawyers, the auditors, the builders of the product, the postmasters themselves. And of course, we've got this ongoing inquiry as well. But there is probably going to have to be, off the back of this and off the back of the inquiry, some consideration around how much responsibility should accountants, auditors, and legal advisors take for what's going on. The problems were fairly apparent as a challenge here around how much support can people and professional services be expected to give if they are maybe unwilling or unable to pay for those services as well.
What I love off the back of this is on social media, someone said they should have used cloud. And they're saying, yeah, 20 years ago, probably wasn't something that was possible. And I just love the idea of Xero being the system of choice for the post office, with the volume of transactions trying to go through that. I think that's great. But going from a huge system being Horizon into another huge system being QuickBooks. QuickBooks have released QuickBooks Solopreneur. Now, I believe this is only in the US at present, but it builds on QuickBooks Self-Employed. So it's a step up from QuickBooks Self-Employed, aimed at those one-person businesses or those single director businesses, and just provides some enhanced functionality, but enables you to add on features as you grow, as you build into a bigger business. And also, if you're aware of what QuickBooks does over in the US with QuickBooks Live and QuickBooks Live Tax, that's also built into the product. So you've got the ability to get support as you grow from the QuickBooks consultants.
A quick one from Quadient, who has integrated with Xero. Quadient, who provides accounts payable software, has now integrated into the Xero App Store and is available to customers in North America and the UK. They can take advantage of some of the efficiencies and Quadient delivers in terms of the need for manual import export of data for purchases, purchase orders, invoices, and payment data. Quick win. Nice. And Quadient has got a range of different accounting applications that are under its umbrella, like YayPay.
Yeah, and I think it's quite fascinating, isn't it, to see a product like Quadient, which is really focused on the top end of the market, talking Microsoft Dynamics, SAP, NetSuite type integrations, to then be effectively stepping down into the Xero app space, which is, we know, is hyper competitive, because we've already seen some products come and go in this space in the past. Yeah, interesting times for them. Something else which is a little bit more negative off the back of that positive news from Quadient is that Revolut have announced that their payroll product is going to be shutting down in April 2024. I must admit, I wasn't aware of this and picked this up off the back of one of Ryan's posts. This is just another indication that payroll products can be very complex. We've seen troubles with established businesses in this market, particularly when they've been launching into the cloud. I wonder if this is just maybe a reflection that maybe Revolut haven't got the traction, or maybe the scale and capability that they want to get to make this a really viable product.
I can't remember if it was this one that we picked up ages ago about bank moving into the accounting and payroll space, but we did say they've got to go some way to compete with the main players. So it's not a massive surprise that this has happened. But I guess linked to payroll, FreshBooks have released a payroll product in the US at present. FreshBooks has not had payroll historically, but they've now released FreshBooks payroll in the US, powered by Gusto, which is a big payroll provider in the US. Maybe this is a precedent that they want to bring payroll products over into the UK. Gusto doesn't really have much of a presence in the UK, so if they go down that route, powered by a different tool. I know that others in the space have been powered by KeyPay historically. Maybe FreshPay go down that route. All speculation at this stage.
And just to end today with a huge congratulations to the Curly Whirly champion, and actually no, a Curly Whirly chart topper. At least you got in at number 50. Ryan Piercy hits the Curly Whirly chart of accounting influencers. So the ranking was changed recently to take into account the SSI score, which is a social selling index. I actually think that's a lot smarter in terms of being able to track how people are doing, and delivers a lot more value to people in the accounting sector looking for influencers who are sharing their content and what types of content is doing well and how it impacts their social selling score.
Thank you very much, so Andy.
You are most welcome. I was quite intrigued because actually I saw in top pole position is Amanda C. Watts. Great content. Love it. Reza Huda, who also puts out quite a few of his own podcasts, does his own bootcamp thing with accountants. And Heather Townsend in number 3, who also has the Accountants Growth Club. And then were there any surprises from your guys' perspective? Have you had a look at the chart to see?
One that I guess I was surprised was so high up was Zoe Goodchild from Innovate Accountancy. Although there has been a lot of talk around Zoe and Innovate historically, which may have pushed it up. Unsurprisingly, you've got the infamous Ashley Leeds up there, of his specialisms in LinkedIn. What I would say is the rating does include a 10% bonus if you subscribe to something on LinkedIn, which I would assume some of the ones towards the top may do because of what they do. It's not something that I have done or really was aware of, but I'm just really happy that I've beat someone I know, Nathan Keeley, by one place who's stuck in 51st. Sorry, Nathan, I've just got ahead of you, even with your huge follower numbers of 14,000 and my measly 4,000. It's such a shame I've just beaten you in the list.
It's intriguing that Reza is scoring as number two and he is an accountant. So that would make him the top accountant. Although, does he still have his accounting practice? I don't know enough about whether he still has his accounting practice. What I mainly see is content that is selling to accountants. And given that most of those people in the tops are selling to accountants, that would make sense because it's a social selling index score. So
definitely.
What it shows is that like accountants aren't really that good, are they? So LinkedIn, social media stuff, particularly if we're looking to target potential customers. Like you say, indeed, the people at the top are targeting a market that is effectively accountants. And for accountants to target a market on LinkedIn, it's much more broad.
And if you're new to this and what we're talking about, this is a list published, I think, monthly by Dermot Hablin on LinkedIn. So follow Dermot and you'll see his posts and see where you are listed.
So it is wonderful to have you here today with us, Johnny. And I know that John gave you a slight intro, didn't really ask us how we are. So we're going to come back through and see how everyone's doing. Johnny, why don't you kick us off? How are you?
I'm good, thank you. I'm good. Good weekend. Yeah, no, loving life.
And are you excited to be joining us today with the beautiful and wonderful Ryan Pearce? You saw a sexy elf. Were you a sexy elf? No, sexy Santa?
Santa.
Mrs. Santa.
Mrs. Claus.
Claus. Yeah, that's kept me going through the festive period. And
please don't ever use kept you going in relating to me as Mrs. Claus. That's something I'd ever want to hear. I was feeling a lot better a few seconds ago, I'll be honest.
I never want to say that ever again.
You can't, it's recorded. That's going out now. You can't ever escape that.
Lovely. Okay, great. So, Ryan, how do you feel about that? Would you like to respond?
I'm scared about doing anything anymore. I'm good. I'm loving Johnny's recent LinkedIn stream of posts. It's lightening up my day. And I actually do go on and go, I wonder what he's posted today. I want to see the picture. I'll look forward to the one after this show. I hope tomorrow's is related to the recording on the podcast.
I'm going to let me get pictures of everyone and I'll see what I can do.
You are a bit of a breath of fresh air on LinkedIn, especially with the amount of content that's going out at the moment. It feels like we've got to just wait for the next sort of installment of five different ways to peel a BlackBerry or whatever you want to call it. The information age is just overloading us with hacks to our life and etc. What I like about yours is just you're just being a human, very human, very normal, and just saying, hey, I'm just trying to build better connections, meaningful conversations. And it sounds like you're gaining traction by the sound of it. Have you had any decent meetings off the back of your latest attempts to connect with people?
So I've definitely had people reach out, which is interesting. Previously, if I tried to connect with people, it was almost like that bit of falling on silence. But there's people that I've reached out to in the last 6 months who have connected. But then there's quite a few people who are now messaging through, what do you call it, DMs. They're DMing me. And there's some nice conversations that have been sparked. And there's some conversations about people have almost, oh, I'm thinking of doing an app. Let's talk. Or I've got this idea, let's share it. So for me, that's the whole point of it. How do we meet more interesting people? How do we have a bit of fun with the whole thing?
I think you've got this kind of rebellious energy. I love that, clearly, because I stick
with it. It's a new Alan Broom. That's what he is. It's a new Alan Broom.
So part of it is, for those people that know me, I hope that they know I'm not serious about much at all. And that's the bit I'm trying to get across.
Based on all the comments that were piss taken in reply, I think you got it across well.
Why did you start with this, of all things?
So last year was a bit of a shit year in terms of we've always grown year on year and we've grown based on referrals. And I've never really taken marketing that seriously until kind of like the back end of this year. And then part of it is almost, it's a numbers game. So you have to have a crowd to talk to if you want to get anything from it. And it doesn't matter how good you are, if you haven't got people to talk to. And so that was then like part of the realization of, if I'm sitting here in my kind of office, no one's ever going to see me to meet brilliant people, to get myself out and about. So it was just starting to look at the whole search engine optimization. How do you start to build a crowd? And then it was almost like Dermot sends his list out and it's like, well, I'm 1,500 off the bottom of it, let alone anywhere near the top of it. Let's just have some fun. And that's the whole kind of premise of it.
The problem you've got now, Jonathan, though, is that your picture of you on that is so good that seeing you in person, I'm actually a bit disappointed now.
That, can I do like a pirate or something like you can do on Zoom?
No.
So I used to have a dressing up box next to me.
Put an eye patch on, little parrot. Although we were on the Rob podcast, aren't we? We're on the Counting Pirates podcast.
I think we're in the Gaunt household red room here.
Yeah, I should have found it. I could have done it. Yeah,
that would have been better than whipping out your latest book.
I haven't done a book. That's what everyone's got to do. Isn't it? That's next on the
list. That's your next step.
Yeah.
That's what you got to do.
Colouring in.
You've got to do a consultancy. Colouring in, yeah.
Painting by numbers.
Yeah, colouring in for accountants. And it'd be one of those magic, they were you when you were little, you used to dip your brush in the water and then just paint it over. You didn't have to get any paint or anything, you just coloured it in. That's what I'll do.
It'll all be grey.
That's exceptional. I would buy that.
No, you wouldn't. There's a whole point of accountants writing books. No, nobody buys the fucking things. They just give them away all the time.
No, it's best-selling because you bought it yourself.
Itchy.
No. But that whole idea of sitting down and writing something, for how long does a book take?
Who's writer? That's what you need, Johnny.
Ryan, can you write me a book, please? Is that it?
Yeah. Do you dictate something, and I'll write it / feed it into some AI platform.
Going back to your LinkedIn takeover, Johnny, have you got it all planned out for the next few weeks, or do you just like shoot from the hip every day?
No, so pretty much I've got some notes.
I think that's obvious, right?
I have got some structure, so I write little notes in my notepad as I go through. But it's quite a nice act of, everyone talks about journaling. And for me, this is almost like my little bit of journaling of almost like, what happened today? What did anybody say? How can I turn that into something a little bit funny?
Yeah.
Last year, I tried to do it properly and I got no engagement. I've got 5 times more engagement messing around than I did when I wrote a serious post.
Well, so that's understandable because like accountants' serious posts are really fucking boring.
Yep.
But it's also the bit of, in reality, if you look at your LinkedIn followers connections, they're all other accountants. So it's not a platform to engage and get business from. For me, it's a platform to mix with like-minded people and share ideas.
Yeah, it depends what you're trying to achieve though, because if you can engage with those accountants and those accountants are connected with their clients, which quite a lot of them are, then indirectly those clients start seeing you through their engagement. You can get it third party, but for what we do, it makes sense because obviously our main channel's accounts. And I guess if you're doing stuff with software, Jonathan, then it makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think for me, it's that whole bit of, I've met so many nice people through accountancy and bookkeeper. That for me is enough of almost like, coming in and there's a little bit of banter you can have during the day is quite a nice, pleasant way of spending 10 minutes just playing around.
It's clear, like, that LinkedIn bit is just more fun for me to see because it's, as you said, you're quite cheeky with it and what you're trying to do. It's not because you're like, okay, I seriously now need to get to 4,000 immediately or something. Or are you? Or a million? A million, not 4,000.
Oh, yeah. No, so some told me I need to go 10x.
What are you on now?
4,000.
10x.
4,013 or something.
Good, I'm still ahead. That's the main thing.
You'll be like, what, twice as many as that?
But either
I'm
which 4, way.
I'm 4,200. That's what I'm on.
Awesome. So tell us about what you've been up to for the last few months.
So I guess if we roll back to the beginning of 2023, Rich, James and myself left Dext at the end of 22. And the idea was, let's give accountants and bookkeepers something which can have a massive impact on how they work on a day-to-day basis. We didn't know what it was. And so I guess 2023 has been the whole thing of, how do we operate in stealth? How do we explore different ideas and then see what sticks? And I guess we've got a superpower in the sense that we've got FD Works to try things out on. So 2023 has really been that whole thing of, how do we hide and avoid people asking questions as to what we're doing.
And how have you gone about either experimenting or trying to find those ideas? I know we spoke way back in January last year on the ski trip about that. I know you were talking to a few people on the trip about ideas as well, but you can almost have too many ideas, and then trying to refine that down into something that's workable is a challenge, right?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think this is the bit of having FD Works. You get to understand what problems we're facing as an industry and what things are troubling me running a accounting firm. And that was really the kind of the start of it. Of I've taught myself to code during lockdown. And so I started to hack together some pretty awful things around how do we just make ourselves more efficient. And then Rich and James have taken some of those and scaled them up. Simple little things like beginning of last year, we had a real problem when we use TaxCalc, it sends us a code. Where does that code go? And so Rich and James just then created this small little seed that it just shoves it into Slack. And that was a problem that we were almost like, whose phone's it gone to? Who's got it? What do we do? And it's little things like that is where we started, and that's grown. And then we've looked at what's stuck, and that's been really the kind of the seed as to where we're going with the whole thing. And we've decided to focus on, call it practice operations. So how do we work as an accounting practice? How do we bring the whole team together as opposed to the day-to-day tasks of bookkeeping, reporting? We think there's more opportunity and value in that operating system.
That challenge around getting a HMRC notification code or something on a phone is a challenge that lots of firms, large and small, trying to overcome. That in itself doesn't make a business though. What is it that you're looking to do in terms of expanding that out? And also, where do Rich and James contribute to that? Because one of the things that's fairly unusual is for a team like this to come back together and do something new.
Yeah. So if I start with the team dynamic, so Rich, James and myself work incredibly well together. It's influenced me in terms of how I shape FD Works. So when we did Savvier Analytics, it was the first time that I'd worked with amazing people where you'd have a conversation, you'd all have different skills, talents, you'd come together, have a conversation, and then you would go away and you'd each do your own individual piece, and then you come back a couple of weeks later and it's almost like, wow, shit, that's good. That kind of spurred me on of that's the type of environment I want to work with. So first thing is we work very well together as a team. In terms of the skills we've got, Rich and James are both brilliant software engineers. James is very technical, so he takes the role of being our CTO and is capable of building those enterprise systems. Rich then has got the perfect balance of being a developer, but he's also very strong from a product point of view. And when we were doing Savvier, he would consistently ask those questions of, what are you doing? Why are you doing that? And then what do you do? And then what? And then he'll go away. And because he's understood the job to be done, he'll come back and build something far stronger. So as a team, we work really well together. As a team, we're able to do everything in-house. So that means that we can build quite quickly. And that's been really exciting and part of the reason why we came back together.
Was that a challenge, bringing everyone back together? Obviously, you went through the whole Savvier thing and then sold out to Dext, were involved with the Dext ownership of that for a time being, and then exited there. I know you guys pretty much all exited at the same time, but was that a conscious decision to then give you a base to do something new? Or is it just the fact that you'd all got to a point and wanted to go at the same time?
No, I think part of it is we probably see it all the time with businesses that we work with. You need different people for different stages of an organization. And I think that we were the right people to build and start to scale a business. We weren't the people to then continue. And at the same time, we all looked at each other and it's almost this bit of actually there's better people out there to take what we've done forward. And so let's then go back to what our skill is of working in uncertainty, trying to shape an idea. So that was almost that it felt as though it was the right time. And we've been at Dext for, 2.5 years? So we'd done what we set out to achieve. It felt as though it's the right time to step away and make space for someone else to step in because that suited what they were very good at.
Yeah. And before we like cycle back to what exactly this sort of new venture looks like, does that experience lend itself to doing something again? Like you said, the team that you had at the time were great at building a brand new product and getting it to a point in time, but then it really needed Dex to take that on a bit further. Do you feel like you've got more potential longevity with this, or do you still have the same limitations in terms of you can do the ideation of a new product and get it off the ground and get it into people's hands, but you still need something else to take it on in 5 years' time, let's say, or something like that?
No, I think part of it is where we work well is that creativity of how do we continually solve problems. What we're hoping to do now, we think there's enough problems to almost keep us busy, keep us active, to keep on playing to our strengths. And then the idea is we can grow it, and then we can then almost bring in the right people to fill some of those gaps that we've got. But we're excited as to where we can take Socket and the opportunity in terms of what we've got in front of us and what we can do.
So tell us a bit more about Socket. What is it that you guys are looking to do?
Okay, so I think part of it is it's bringing it all back together, and it's about joining everything together. And I think we've talked about this quite a bit, John, of one of the problems we've got in the modern kind of practice is that data is so disjointed. And so I think there's a couple of big problems which exist out of there that practices don't understand the real kind of like profitability of the work they do. There is so much scope creep which exists out there. And I think then there's also an awful lot of the workflow is disjointed, so the systems don't talk to each other. So you've got proposal systems, you've then got the whole kind of like delivery piece, and the connections between those just don't work. And we've spent a lot of time almost looking at this whole kind of space as to how do we understand where we make money? How do we understand where there's a little bit of work we're giving away? And that's where I think there's a massive opportunity here. And what spearheads that kind of problem is the proposal. And so the proposal should be that starting point where you're starting to define the scope of what you're doing, and it gets the clarity between the accountant and the client. And I don't think that kind of exists in the way that it should right now.
It's quite an interesting proposition, because there are quite a few proposal softwares out there in the market that would say they've done a good job of solving that problem. And maybe the problem rests with accountants and the scope creep kind of just accommodating that. So are you saying that you're going to build a new proposal software, or are you going to build something that tries to address that scope creep?
Where we started 2023 was we were hoping to work with the existing systems that are out there. What we realized quite quickly is that we couldn't get the data in the format that we wanted or the shape that we... And so to start with, we're looking at that whole proposal piece, because we think there's lots of opportunities to not only go down the kind of the current way of taking that data. Okay, you've got the data. How do I set up the workflow? There's also a massive opportunity of going up and looking at the whole kind of optimizing the sales, because there's so much disconnect. If I look at the number of opportunities that we perhaps haven't followed up because we've been too busy, or it's in a slightly different system, we're using a CRM to capture our leads. There's so much disconnection that we think there's a whole opportunity of starting to join it up. Let's optimize the sale. Let's do the proposal. Then let's start to look at workflow automation. Let's look at the practice profitability and almost go from there and start to solve all of these problems. But we can't do that if we haven't got the right data. And again, we've got the benefit of being able to start with a clean sheet of paper. So we're almost able to look at what works, what doesn't, what would we like with our own practice. And then we've used that as a starting point to build from.
You guys are starting from a blank sheet of paper, but a lot of practices aren't necessarily starting from a blank piece of paper, yep, particularly when it comes to their data and, you know, systems, etc. So how do you help practices to overcome that challenge? Because we're going through a process at the moment as a practice at Beaver Shudders to try and cleanse some of our data to match fields between different products. And it is a mammoth undertaking. Can you guys solve that problem? Or is that something that practices have to go along a journey of their own for, and then try and bring your product into the mix at the same time?
So I think there's definitely things that can be done better. So the whole bit of, well, when you start a proposal, you're not going and getting clean data from Companies House feels as though that's a bit of a quite a simple task. That if you can start there, then you can definitely make sure that the data you get tomorrow is the right data. But absolutely, John, one of the things that we've been playing around with is this whole kind of concept of aliases. So how can you have different aliases in different systems that you can start to then join things up so that moving forward, you have got the consistency. And we want to play nicely. So we want to play nicely with the likes of Carbon. We want to play nicely with the likes of XPM of how do we get that data? And then how do we start to use that to seed the information that we're moving forward? But it is a massive problem. But I think this is where it's really interesting of getting people like James and Rich to look at it and spend some real time trying to do something that kind of solves a lot of these problems.
So when you're saying you're going out to some more of these businesses that you named, like Carbon and XPM,
yeah,
how amenable are they to sharing what is something that they have built and may feel is proprietary and don't want to then export that data in the way that they have built the database that fits and suits the use case that they have with the accountant? Yeah. How are you finding the collaboration from that perspective?
It is about playing nicely with each other. And what we're not setting out here to take over the practice management kind of space, it's that whole bit of how do we play nicely together? So in the likes of Carbon, we're having conversations in terms of, well, actually, you've got an established base there. How do we take that data and how do we start to bend to fit that? How can we start to do things that kind of clean it up as we go through? And I think it's that bit of accepting that it's not perfect, but we can do lots to try and make it cleaner moving forward. And again, is there a bit of an exercise here that when we onboard clients, do we take them through that kind of data cleanup exercise as well?
Data has become so cheap as a currency. It goes back to what the business I work for, we say it's not just the data, it's in the power of making decisions with that data. So if you're able to insert more decisions into the workflow, which is I think what you're saying you're trying to do, yeah, here, is that you're able to use the data to deliver business owners the insights of decisions that could or should be made to improve. Is that about right?
So I think there's this big thing about how do you only ask for data once? So because systems aren't joined up, because we've got a disconnect between system A and system B, we're not doing things like onboarding particularly well. So take a proposal. Your proposal is made up of a number of services. Those services will then determine what data you need to collect. Is that data collected up front? Who knows? Because there's nothing simple out there that sort of goes through and says, we're doing reporting accounts. What data points do we need? So we need an authentication code. We need the UTR. Have we got that? Possibly, but no one's going through and saying, yes, we've definitely got that. Let's move on. And then when you get to things like scheduling, actually, scheduling shouldn't be particularly hard if you collect the right data points. So take a VAT return. As long as you know it's quarterly and in which cycle it is, you therefore can schedule out for the rest of for eternity. And I think it's this whole bit of how do you start to join everything up together? How do you ask the question kind of once? And then that flows. So then if you go back and sell someone some additional services, it's almost then that trigger of going, hang on a minute, we're now doing a VAT return for Ryan. Okay, Ryan, I need to know these kind of questions. And I think there's also this bit of actually that data might exist somewhere else. So how do we then start to bring it all together so that it is there when you need it?
Definitely. I mean, what you're trying to do makes sense. It's trying to join it all and pull it through. But my concern, being the cynic that I am, is that you've decided you wanted to go for the proposals. And the first thing you've hit, you've gone, we can't get the data we need. So we need to build something to solve that. And my concern is that that will be what you hit every step of the way because of the, there's no standardization in the way people collect data. There's no API standardization that every time you hit a piece, you'll be like, oh, we've got to build this. And it starts becoming a mammoth project. And so that focus is the bit that's going to be really critical as you build this product out, I feel, to ensure that you're doing what you set out to deliver upon rather than get dragged into all these other areas.
Absolutely. And I think that's the bit of, so we've built version one. So we've built version one and we've been using it at FD Works for the last 4 months. So we have something which the team are using, the team are loving. We are doing all of our invoicing and billing through the system. So we are seeing massive time savings already with the tool that we're using. And I think what we're looking to do is curate who we onboard initially. And a big part of that, Ryan, is about how do we take them on a journey with us to understand how they're using the tool and then building to fill some of those gaps. Or when a bug arises, how can we fix that very quickly? What we're not saying is this is perfect, start using it. What we're looking at is how can we onboard the right people and give them the best experience so that we can be very focused and solve their pain points. We're listening to the customer and building what they want. And in some instances saying, no, that's what we're aiming to do.
Cool. The bit that I think you also touched on is that when they built Go Proposal, they changed how accountants thought about things. When you built Xavier, which became Dex Precision, you also had to change how accountants thought about things. And so that education piece, by the way you're talking, sits hand in hand with the software you're building. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And so something really simple of we spotted a real pain point last year. So early on was about scope creep. And so we built a very simple tool that we got the team to look at what was in the proposal. And if it wasn't in the proposal, we were just firing off a very simple change order, which was nothing more than this isn't within your proposal. Do you want us to do it for you? And we think it's going to be about £500, and almost giving the client then an opportunity of within an email saying, yes, please. And then that sat there that we could almost go through and say, yeah, we've done that. Now let's bill it. And we've generated between 10 and 15% extra revenue based on doing nothing more than getting paid for the work that we were already doing. So I believe that we were giving that work away. And that's ultimately straight through to the bottom line. In some instances, when you write to a client and say, do you want me to do that? They're saying, no, I'll do it myself. Or I don't worry about doing it. So for me, again, it's the added benefit of either we're getting paid for it or we're not doing it. And I fear that there are so many accountants and bookkeepers out there that are giving work away and they don't really understand the profitability of what they're doing. And I think that's a real problem. And that's something that we want to be able to help to solve that pain.
It sounds really interesting. And I've got probably two more questions, if that's all right. My first question then is, you've clearly got an initial focus here around that sort of proposal and scope creep. But do you make this available to more of the market? You mentioned that you guys use TaxCalc, for example, got Carbon in the mix as well and stuff. But what about those accountancy firms, you know, like Minor Ryan's, for example, that aren't using those kind of products? You know, is this something that we're just going to sit on our hands and wait for? Or is this something that will be prioritized based on market demand? How are you going to fill that gap?
So we've just launched our website, which is usocket.com. And what we're asking to there is we're asking people to go in and just give us a couple of simple questions. What practice management software are you using? And what proposal software are you using? And we're going to use that to curate some of those early conversations. In a lot of the research, John, we have gone out and we have spoken to firms of different sizes. And so we're starting to seed elements of, okay, how can we build something which could scale? And so an example of that is like billing, for example. We're building a billing engine that at the moment speaks to zero. But there's no reason why that billing engine couldn't fit into CCH or create an output which would put it in the right format for you to use in a larger firm. And again, there's a lot of learning from Xavier Dex Precision around what's the difference between a smaller firm and a mid-tier. And so again, we were a little bit slower getting started this time round because we wanted to build an enterprise-ready system that would give us that scale. And so this is where James has spent an awful lot of time making sure that what we're building from day one is a scalable solution. Whereas on the Xavier journey, it was almost that bit of, we started off doing everything on the cheap. And then it was almost that bit of, we really should be on AWS, for example. So you then spend time having to rebuild stuff to make sure it's right. We've built it enterprise ready from the start. And hopefully that gives us the ability to be able to scale longer term.
Yeah, sounds great. My final question then, which I think you almost alluded to, is like, where do firms go to find out a bit more? You mentioned the website, usesocket.com. And what else is potentially in the pipeline? Do you have an idea of what that might look like?
Yeah, if you look at some of the areas of friction, it starts with that initial kind of contact from prospect. How do we capture that into proposal? We've got billing management. So those two are kind of elements that we've tackled already. Where do we go from there? The scheduling. There's that whole CRM piece of how do we get that perfect data set in those systems. We've got work management, value tracking. So again, for me, what's really interesting is I don't think we've got a particularly good grasp on who generates value from a client, who's your most valuable client. And so I think there's a massive piece around there. So we've got quite a bit of kind of space that I think we can play in, but it's that bit of doing it at the right pace. And I think it's also looking at what else others are doing and how do we play nicely with that? Because we are a startup, we are small, we're not as well funded as others. And so for me, it's that bit of actually, how do we do the right thing? And how do we please our customers ultimately?
Oh, marvelous. Oh, thanks for that, Johnny. It was awesome. And yeah, I'm sure I'll be jumping on the website at some point to find out a bit more about Socket. And I'll definitely be asking you about it next week when we're on the slopes.
I'll give you a demo.
Oh, I can't wait.
Are we doing the bread run next week?
Yeah, I think so.
No.
I'm going for
those giant pan au chocolat again.
We got carried away last time, didn't we?
Yeah, we did, yeah.
Well, you mean when you go skiing, who does a bread run? I thought it was like a particular type of run, but it's not. It's just you go for it, get the bread.
It's a walk.
It's a walk. It's an amble.
Yeah.
It's like care in the community. I take Johnny to the shops and he gets to spend his hard-earned money and then we take him home.
Oh, that's so cute.
Yeah, put my teeth in and then I eat the bread.
John and I are going to do a 3-day cleanse this week, aren't we?
We are indeed.
No eating or drinking, only water for 3 days before he goes skiing.
Shut up.
Oh yeah.
Shh.
He's my buddy on it.
Cleanse 3 days.
When's that starting?
Thursday.
I was thinking because we're out tomorrow.
Thursday.
You vodka though, couldn't you?
No, because you need
strong water.
Alcohol. We're not, it's like only water.
What's that? There's a brand of alcoholic water, isn't there? Someone would post it on LinkedIn.
What?
And they've come out with a non-alcoholic version.
White Claw.
Yeah, that's it. The alcoholic water has a non-alcoholic version, which I think is great. It's the best marketing in the world. Here's water, but it's non-alcoholic alcohol water.
Well, he hasn't paid yet. Up north, yeah. It's a bit like Uber. Yeah,
we've barely got Uber where I am, to be honest.
We've got a 5-star rating, Uber.
Well done.
Should post about that,
Johnny. You got a 5-star rating? That's impossible. Show us. No, the last time I had this conversation, it was with a lady in a queue waiting for a taxi where all the trains were cancelled. And she said, oh, I've got a 5-star rating. I was like, that's absolutely impossible. And I made her check and it wasn't. It was like 4.82 or something like that.
5.00.
I've got a 4.94 rating on Uber.
I don't believe you either.
I'll make a point. Every time I go in a taxi now, I'm really nice to the taxi driver and I ask him, can I have a 5-star rating?
Tip of 100 quid.
Oh, do you? Keep it going.
Have you only ever been in an Uber once and it was driven by one of your kids?
No, and I get out and I say, if you give me less than 5-star, I'm going to come and find you.
Yeah, 4.94.
Have you left us a 5-star review on the pod?
No. Should I do it now? Where do I do it?
There's silence.
Where do I find this podcast thing that you guys do? Where is that?
You do what?
I like how you came in. You're like, I love what you do. I love everything. It's basically, come on, set challenge the shit. This is the best thing ever. Love it. And you're like,
Now he realizes he's been listening to a different podcast.
I'm like, shit, this is, which one are you, Stephen Bartlett?
Look at that. He has, he's got a 5-star rating. I've just seen it. He sent it to me.
Proof.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
He's only ever done one ride, and it was from the front door around the corner.
Oh, just try and find out how many times I've used it.
You haven't made it onto the accounting one, but a 5-star on Uber rating, pretty impressive.
Johnny, what's your rating on Babs taxis?
Babs taxis? Babs cab. This is my wife. She's been a star a couple of times in the last month or so. One, I went out with some friends and I was going to be home early, and she rang me going, where are you? To which I responded,
no idea.
Oh, I'm still out. What time is it? And she said, it's 2:00 in the morning. And then I said, are you up? And she said, yes. I said, do you want to come pick us up? So she then picked me in my 4 other friends up and then dropped us all home one by one. And then another time I went out, this was about 3 or 4 weeks later, I went out with some friends to watch a rugby. We didn't actually get to the rugby. Oh. We stayed in the pub. And then, yeah, Babs Cabs was called out then as well. Took her 2 hours door to door.
Jesus Christ, the commitment.
That reminds me of someone else that I know who dropped his son off with some friends on the outskirts of London. And bearing in mind, they live in Cardiff. So they took him all the way to Cardiff. They were driving back. They were just driving past Bristol to get a phone call from their son saying, I can't find my wallet anywhere and I'm supposed to be going out. So they pull over at the services, go through the car and find his wallet. It's like on the back seat of the car. Steve, who's his dad, was like, I'm not going back. I'm like 25 minutes, half an hour from home. There's no chance of going back. I've just driven 2 hours, whatever it is. And mum's in the car and she's like, no, can't go back. You can't go back. Just give him his wallet. Otherwise, he can't go out. So he turned round, drove all the way back across to London, dropped this bloody wallet off, and then drove back. So this journey, which was supposed to take whatever it is, like 3.5 hours round trip or something, took like almost the entire day.
So my dad, after he's hired from the police, he was doing some chauffeuring for a while and he picked up someone from London. And so he dropped this guy off at this event and then he's picked this guy up and he's driving him home. And this guy in the back turns around and he goes, a little bit worse wet. Where are you taking me? Is someone taking you home? He said, well, I don't live here. So my dad had picked up the wrong person from an event and was taking him to someone else's house.
Yeah. How far did he get before the guy realised?
A good 10 minutes.
Oh, that's not too bad then.
You just imagine me. Actually, I've got a funny taxi story. We went out for a friend's birthday. We drank a little bit too much and I was most sober out of a lot of us. So I said, don't worry, I'll get us home. So the taxi took us home. We got to the front door and then I realised that my key wouldn't fit in the door. And it's because I'd moved out of that house 10 years earlier.
Oh dear.
To which the lights upstairs went on and I could see someone walking down the stairs. And it's like, last run.
There we go. That's the end of another awesome podcast. We hope that you enjoyed the content and the interview and everything else. As always, we do ask you to rate us, leave us a review, share it with your friends and family and anyone else in your professional network as well. And make sure to check out the website and check out more about the digital disruptors and what we're doing there as well, because we think there's lots of value for people to gain from that. And we would love you to join the network and be more involved in what we do.